This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and what has turned out to be a fairly philosophical episode today with a remarkable man, John Adams of Kingsburg, California. He's 93 years old now, but has some serious energy and serious ingenuity. If you have the privilege of shaking his hand someday, maybe you can ask him about some of his patents, like one for a ratchet pipe cutter. Or maybe you can have him demonstrate how he turns exquisite plates and other treasures on his wood lathe. We've heard about his youth in Lindsay, California, the admiration he had for two men who died while serving our country, and the disappointment he felt when, after earning his wings as a naval pilot, he was assigned to training other pilots in Indiana for a year and a half. When those 18 months were up, though, you did get into the Pacific Theater with the Naval Air Transport Service. You'd flown PBYs and PBMs, but what did you end up flying in the Pacific, and what was it you were transporting?
They called them R5Ds, and that was a four-engine Douglas, and that's called a 54.
C-54.
Yeah. You transported everything. See, I was sent to Hawaii, so we flew across the Pacific out west and then back to Oakland, California, every other trip. So going west, the load was usually blood, plasma, and whole blood, or both, or one or the other. And then coming back to California, we had people, soldiers.
So you're flying this big transport plane, and when you're flying from the West Coast out to the Pacific, your entire cargo, and this is a big plane that can hold a lot, but your entire load was whole blood and blood plasma.
Yeah, it was blood plasma at first, and then they developed a way to keep whole blood long enough. And when we had that aboard, that took priority. In other words, we couldn't sit on the ground.
Yeah, you had some urgency, because otherwise your whole cargo is going to be spoiled, and what's
the
point?
Right.
I know you are anticipating facing this enemy out there somewhere, but when you think back on that duty alone of bringing blood and plasma to the Pacific, where the reality is wounded soldiers and airmen and Marines needed it to save their lives, right? I mean, that's the idea.
Mm-hmm.
How much pride does that give you in what you were able to do and the duty that you carried out? Because really, people think about war and there's a lot of death and destruction, but that job was saving lives, wasn't it?
Right.
If you don't get it there, guys are going to die.
The only thing I can say about that is I was amazed when I was reading or told, I don't know where the story came from, but it was authentic, that the government had ordered a lot more caskets than they ever used. And that was the reason, because of the blood. Well, my feelings about it, I can't answer that.
But I want everybody to hear this. What you just said was that the government estimates of how many caskets would be needed to meet the demand in terms of casualties, there were a lot of leftover caskets at the end because the blood that you helped transport to the war zone saved that many lives. That's a pretty unique duty, isn't it, to have that privilege of transporting that cargo?
Well, I do know that I was happy to be in a transport division.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that work. I spent very, very few days unhappy in 4 years of Navy.
Mm. So when you're flying west, you're taking these life-saving materials, but when you're flying back east from the Pacific back to California, you said you were transporting people.
Personnel.
Was it people who had been wounded?
A few times, yeah. But I didn't get any hospital flights. I was looking forward to that, but I never got one.
You know, I've interviewed tons of pilots on this program, fighter pilots, bomber pilots. I've had fighter pilots say, you know, I'm glad it was only me in the plane, that I only had to be responsible for myself. I've had bomber pilots say, boy, I felt a heavy burden for a 10-man crew, that all those lives are in my hands. What did you feel on a C-54 full of guys who were trying to get out of the war and go home?
Where they had been didn't make it any, but you always feel that responsibility, of course, when you're flying passengers. I came home as a passenger from Hawaii to Oakland and sat in a bucket seat. And that's an interesting story. I sat right next to the first prisoner of war from the Pacific that was released to come home from the Philippines. And he was a dentist in the Navy. and he'd spent 4 years as a prisoner of war of Japanese. He was telling about it, and he would, this sounds funny that I use this as an illustration, he's like a coffee pot perking. He'd perk a little bit, and there'd be silence. Then he'd perk a little bit, and silence, telling me what he went through. And it was unbelievable. Mm. It just unbelievable.
And I imagine just sitting next to him and seeing the physical shape he was in had to be eye-opening.
Yeah, he had said a few things that shook me. Just, and it was a shaking experience. And then after saying that, he said, I know I'm not right. And he was a dentist, so he was highly educated. But he was saying some things that he didn't even want to believe, but they were there.
Things that had happened to him.
Oh, yeah.
Things that the Japanese had done to him.
Yeah, him and the others. He was from Cabanatuan.
Well, and that Cabanatuan was the camp where there was a daring American raid to free prisoners from that camp. In fact, a movie was made a few years ago called The Great Raid. Was he one who was freed in that raid?
Yeah.
When you're listening to that and you're seeing this man and you're grasping what he went through for 4 years, what's your response? What happens inside of you as you process that?
I was dumbfounded.
Hard to believe.
Oh, sure.
Is there part of you that says, man, that could have been me?
Oh, sure.
It just strikes me. Here, the start of the war, your best friend dies at Pearl Harbor. Now here toward the end of the war, you're sitting elbow to elbow with a guy who was tortured and beaten and saw others executed in a brutal Japanese prisoner of war camp. Sure sounds like you came face to face with some pretty intense examples of the price of that victory in World War II and those who paid the price.
Well, I think we probably most of us, you know, met someone.
Mm-hmm. What gives you the most satisfaction or pride with regard to the years that you spent in the Navy and the things you did?
I was fortunate enough to be in. That's it. I would have been terribly unhappy had I not been able to go.
Why was that so important to you?
Well, I guess because of my mentor, Paul Bunch. Paul had everything. He was an athlete, and he was intelligent. He had gotten his degree from San Jose State, and then he got another degree at Cal. He could do anything body-wise or anything mentally. He was sharp.
Mm-hmm.
He was a leader.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm listening to what you say about Paul Bunch and what you shared about Harvey Sanderson, someone else who obviously was very talented in the musical realm.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those guys died
during
World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And you tied that together with your opportunity to serve and how important that was for you. Are you saying that you felt a responsibility to do something with your own opportunity, your own life, knowing that those two very talented and two guys who had so much to give that their lives were cut short?
You just never forget your friendship with them,
mm-hmm.
and what they taught you and what you learned from them. I don't think Harvey would go along with what he taught me, but he did, of course. Everybody teaches. We're all teachers, and we're all students in varying degrees.
Very true. Have you ever found yourself wondering, had those guys lived? Had they survived the war? What kind of lives they might have had?
I'm pretty sure I thought that. I wish they had, but here I'm 93, and a lot of wishes have been forgotten.
Was there ever a time? I mean, you were in from very early on in the war to the end. Was there ever a time during those years in the Navy where you felt scared or you wondered if you were going to survive?
I don't remember. What I remember, it was all good remembering. I think that's well stated. Just to this day, I'm grateful that I was old enough to be in the war and to serve there, and I've always been grateful for that.
I know I've asked you a lot of questions, but before I forget, I do want to say thank you for serving our country. Thank you for that example you set. Thank you for telling us a lot about it. When you think back on it now, and like you said, you're 93, be 94 in October. I know you've got 6 kids and 9 grandkids. What are you most thankful for when you think of 93 years?
I think, and I'm asking myself, I want to be as honest as I can. I thank my relationship with my Lord Jesus Christ.
Mm.
And I used Paul Bunch as a mentor, but Christ is my mentor, real mentor, because he's always with me. When I was age 17, mm-hmm. I accepted Christ as my Savior.
Is that something that colored your perspective during your years in the Navy? That maybe you dealt with the things that happened differently because of that?
Oh, I'm sure I did. It guided me where to go and where not to go, what to do and what not to do. It had an influence there for sure.
Are you saying that specifically with relation to the Navy or in life in general?
Life in general. It's still that way.
Last question. Again, myself included, most people listening to this were not alive in World War II. What do you think the rest of us need to know and remember about what you and everyone else alive in America at that time were able to accomplish?
That's an easy one. I think the most important part of my growing up was the Depression. I feel this way. I feel it frequently. Oh, what these young people needed was a Depression.
So they wouldn't take anything for granted?
Right.
Sounds like you haven't taken anything for granted in a long time.
Why should I?
Indeed. And why should the rest of us, especially after a taste of this World War II veteran's perspective today? We're out of time on today's program. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.